Christmas Eve of 1949 was the last one we spent together. And I often think the corpse of that man was a sign. There was a corpse in the house with us that night. The remains of a desperate man who took his own life on St. Croix. But before that, he died to be buried on Vieques. By then, I knew that the dead were dead. People who would never wake up. But there was a time when I was 4 or 5 years old when they had me believe that the corpses transported by the captain in his small plane were travelers who had fallen asleep. When I was that age, my father would take me to the mosquito landing strip to pick up cases of provisions or liquor and cases of bed linen or towels that he'd ordered for the hotel. If the captain happened to have a dead person with him, someone who had died on Isla Grande, Big Island is what we called Puerto Rico, or on St. Croix, someone whose family felt like spending the money to bury the body on Vieques, he sat it down beside him like a copilot, and covered it with sheets. My father would find some excuse to take me aside and tell me in a quiet voice, "He's sleeping. The captain's going to wake him now." It wouldn't have mattered to me very much if they told me it was a corpse. I didn't have a very clear idea of death, and I'm sure I wouldn't have tried to find out anything else. Except once, when one of the bodies, a pregnant girl who died of tuberculosis, suffered a mishap when they arrived. The captain went to take the girl out of the plane and hand her over to her parents, who'd been waiting for their dear departed, just like we'd been waiting for the case of provisions. And the flower sheet covering her became soaked with blood. We were all deeply affected because the body also gave off a cloying, repugnant smell. It was a troubling smell that penetrated my bones. My father covered my eyes and said, "Don't watch her sleeping." The captain's hands were stained, and later I saw him wiping them with a rag. The girl's parents, who'd brought a coffin with them, put her in it without pulling back the sheet and left, not saying goodbye, in the same one-horse wagon they arrived in. John Timothy Bunker, who devoted himself to carrying freight and his parakeet Cessna, was born in Maine. But when he was 15, his father took him to live in the Virgin Island. The old man, Lawrence Bunker, an engineer and combat pilot, had been one of the group of advisors who recommended the acquisition of St. Croix to President Wilson. J.T. liked to say that on the day he was born, his father couldn't be in Port Clyde with his wife, who was giving birth for the first time, because he was in Christiansted, throwing out the last of the Danes. Years later, old man Bunker got sick of the Caribbean and wanted to return to his roots. The secret fishing on Monaghan Island and the red sunsets of Muscongos Bay. His son chose to stay in St. Croix, earning a living with his small plane, transporting cargo or passengers, whichever pay more. In 1941, a reporter from New York, who was writing an article in Christiansted, asked J.T. to take him to Vieques. They both stayed at Frank's guest house, my father's little hotel. I was 2 years old at the time, and my mother, who has been 20, posed with me for the reporter near the cliff of Puerto Diablo. The photograph appeared in the New York Times, and behind my mother, who held me in her skirt, you could see the silhouette of a large bottle ship. The caption under the photograph said that President Roosevelt and Admiral Lehigh were traveling on the ship. After that first trip, JT became my father's friend and began to make frequent flights to Vieques, every 2 or 3 months at first, and then in 43 or 44, when he arranged to be a subcontractor for a man who, in turn, held contracts with the Navy, not a week went by that he didn't come to the island and, in passing, to the hotel, taking advantage of the opportunity to bring something my father had asked for, and at times a toy for me too. In general, he carried food and electrical equipment. Occasionally, if he had room, he agreed to carry a passenger or two. In those days, a good number of people who had lost lands and livestock in the expropriations being carried out by the Navy, we almost always used the English word, Navy, were moving to St. Croix to look for work. Some were unlucky enough to die, and although of all those who did die, barely a handful could allow themselves the luxury of returning to the cemetery in Isabel II. That was true of the corpse we sheltered on Christmas Eve 1949, a tormented soul who, without intending to, added more fear to our fear and more anguish than we perhaps could bear. Papa was shaving when my mother sent me to tell him that John, she never called him GT, JT or Captain or any other name but that one, needed to talk to him. Sometimes, when he brought in a corpse on the plane, its muscles and bone became so rigid he couldn't move it. Then he'd ask Tomboy Eileen on the beach for help, someone strong enough to straighten out the bones of death, and hungry enough or poor enough not to feel either disgust or fear. But that afternoon, JT didn't find anyone near the mosquito landing strip who could help him. The dead man's family had not come at the agreed-upon time to pick up the body. By now, the corpse was as stiff as 2 stock dogs. That was the description my father used, and its arms and legs so contracted it was almost impossible to get the body out of the plane. The captain came to our house, holding his dark Panama in his hands, turning it round and round as if he were looking for a sign in the hat, and in a quiet voice he told my mother what had happened. He was sorry to bother us on a holiday, but he needed the help of his friend Frank. My mother drew herself erect. She would always stand erect in a way that, over time, began to seem contradictory to me. She would throw out her chest and look straight ahead, like a pigeon about to impose its authority, which was not very natural in a woman with a character as peaceful as hers. Standing erect in that way, she told the captain that a dead person is a dead person and could not spend the night outdoors. I was a few steps away from my mother and her everything, thinking it looked like a disagreement, but knowing it really wasn't. She asked me to find my father, who, as I've said, was in the bathroom shaving. Papa went out with traces of lather on his face to get the keys to his truck. Since the captain was driving his wheelies, a military vehicle we'll call Eugene the Jeep, where nobody would have dared to see the corpse. They sped away, and my mother put her arm around my shoulders but didn't say anything. A couple of hours later, when it was getting dark, they came back. They were crestfallen and spoke to my mother in whispers. She turned and looked at me, and I pretended to read the comics in the newspaper. I heard her say, "Andres, come with me to the kitchen." I stood up and followed her. She gave me some of the sweet she was preparing as our Christmas Eve dessert. It was a custard with tears. My mother called the drop of lemon juice she squeezed over it tears, and they were slow as they ran down the sides of the custard, slow and tremulous, as if something were hurting the dessert. We sat down at the kitchen door that opened onto the courtyard that in turn led to the service door of the hotel. She watched me eat the custard, and when I happened to look up, I suddenly discovered a bitter sigh. My mother, who 3 or 4 months before had looked just like the actress in Buffalo Bill, who was certainly the same one who'd been in The Mark of Zorro, and was not called pretty, Linda Darnell, for nothing, didn't look like anybody anymore. Not like that actress, not like herself. At least on that day, in the weak light that faintly lit the kitchen, my mother had dark circles under her eyes and had been transformed into something delicate but unknown. She began to talk to me, and I didn't listen. I was trying to examine her face to find out what had changed. "Do you hear me, Andres?" She knew I was paying no attention to her, but I nodded that I was. She persisted, "Listen to me just for a minute."